Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Here's a long drive to right. Cornell Washington can't get that one. It is gone. Bill Buckner hits his eighth home run of the season. He had seven in the regular year. And that's going to be all for Catfish Hunter.
Midday score.
Vintage stuff there. Bill Buckner's home run off Catfish Hunter in the 1974 World Series. And it comes with a Claudel Washington mention thrown in there.
Big day.
Man, that's all I need. The segment is brought to you by the Chicago Bears. Don't miss your chance to hang out with the Chicago Bears. Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through 9th in Rosemont. Get free autographs and photos. One-of-a-kind panels with the 2019 Bears Hall of Famers. Other alumni on stage. Weekend passes still available. Visit ChicagoBears.com for tickets. Fergie Jenkins is on Twitter at 31 Fergie Jenkins, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. How are you doing today, Fergie?
Hey, morning, guys. How's things going?
Things are good. And looking back on a former Cub who was an important Cub for a long time and a 21-year major leaguer, a long career, you didn't really have any problems getting Bill Buckner out. Some people did. You were not one of those who did. What are your memories of the longtime big leaguer?
Well, when I faced Bill, he was a rookie with the Dodgers. He came up with Say and Russell and Lopes, a lot of different young players. So, you know, I just had to do my homework as much as anybody else. And I tried to just keep him off base, keep him to the point where he didn't have to hit a lot of fastballs. Because he, you know, in the minor leagues, they're good fastball hitters. So I threw probably a lot of breaking pitches to Billy and was fortunate enough that got him out from time to time.
We were talking earlier in the show, Fergie, just about how the idea of not striking out and putting the ball in play during Bill Buckner's era specifically, yours too for sure, but Buckner specifically, was so important. The guy never struck out three times in a game. It was a point of pride to him. I wonder how much that was, that kind of ethos was talked about between pitchers and hitters in your day when you were playing.
Oh, yeah, that was an important factor of putting the ball in play was very important. I remember Glenn Beckert had over 600 at bats, only struck out 17 times. You know, Bill Buckner was a similar type of hitter. I mean, the contact situation in the 60s and 70s and even in the 80s was an important factor. Put the ball in play. Don't give up. Don't be an out that would utilize you getting yourself out of an inning. And that fundamental was something that the Dodgers strived, the Cub organizations, a lot of different organizations to put the ball in play, don't strike out.
Well, we know better now, actually. We know about how runs are produced and the value of the home run and what it means. And I tried to explain it because we've been looking over Bill Buckner's statistics, and it doesn't really paint a picture that is understandable as easily in the modern context of baseball, because he was doing what he was instructed to do. And that was move the ball, drive the ball, wasn't lift the ball in a way that would create more runs. The debate we were having.
He was a line drive hitter. I mean, he had a lot of doubles. I think one year, similar to Mark Grace, he led the league in doubles. So even though he wasn't a power hitter to hit 25 to 30 home runs every season, he had a lot of base hits. And that's what the contact part of his repertoire was. Put the ball in play. Not be an easy out, and by far be a good base runner.
So this is the debate we're having, Fergie. If Bill Buckner, the very same guy with the very same skill set, were coming up now in the minor league system where they've got the Rapsodo device and the Edgertronic cameras and they understand exit velocity and launch angle and all that, with his bat-to-ball skill, just being what it is, the God-given talent, don't you think that they would have found more power if Bill Buckner were coming up through a system now?
Well, probably. They'd probably put him on a weight program. That was similar to Mark Grace and Palmeiro. when you think about players that the Cubs had in their organization, Palmeiro wasn't the guy that was supposed to be a power hitter. Mark Grace was a contact hitter. Mark Grace was a guy that put the ball in play. They were both first basemen. Similar situations. Bill Buckner, I think if the organization would have, the Dodgers, or even when they got traded to the Cubs, would have thought about it, would have put him on a weight program, gotten stronger, wanted to pull the ball more, he'd have probably hit probably a lot more home runs.
Fergie, you played with him from 82 to 83, and I wonder what kind of reputation Buckner had as a teammate and what you could the guy battled through an injury in 75 and I guess had to do that for the rest of his career just to get up and play every day.
He iced down every day. There wasn't a day he didn't put ice on his ankles. Unfortunately, that probably was something that sidelined him, not playing regular all the time. And when he got traded to Boston, he was kind of a platoon player from time to time. But with the Cubs, I've seen him ice down every day, went out there and played. You know, Leon Durham was a first baseman also, but Leon was in the outfield. So a lot of times Bill Buckner was a first baseman. He was in the lineup because I'm not sure who the manager was at the time, if it was Dallas or someone else, but Bill Buckner was a regular at first base and did a great job.
I think it's important that you bring up that he was part of that Dodgers crew, because when I was younger, it was always like the next wave in Albuquerque. It was always the Dodgers. It was always the Dodgers that had the next guy or the next group of guys. They had an incredible run of rookies of the year when they were just out ahead of what other teams were doing. And for him to have had that pedigree, and when the Cubs traded for him, part of it was, ooh, that was the guy the Dodgers liked so much, so he has to be good. Because once you had the imprimatur of the Dodgers system, it told the rest of the league that you were probably special.
Oh, definitely. He was in that era with Dusty Baker and, as I say, Ron Say, Steve Garvey, Lopes, Russell. I mean, there were so many guys. Jaeger.
Wasn't Tom Pachoric one of those guys, too?
Yes.
Yep.
I think the biggest thing is they produced a lot of players. Some of these players had to trade positions. Like, Buckner, look, he was an outfielder. With Valentine was there at the time, too. So that was a lot of different athletes that Dodger organization produced a lot of good players.
Fergie, looking at the Cubs the last week or so, there's been a couple of bumps in the road for starters that have otherwise had, you know, really solid handful of starts, four or five starts in a row for guys like Hendricks and Lester and even Hamels. I wonder, you know, when you started to lose a little bit off the fastball in your career, when the numbers started going down just a little bit, what were the most important things that got told to you about how to pitch once you realized you had to do it a little differently?
Well, I think the number one thing is the knowledge of going out there, and you learn from experience, so that when you do lose a foot or so off your fastball or guys are catching up to your slider, I think that the knowledge that you have from past experience, especially being a control pitcher, and I didn't walk people. I stayed in the strike zone a lot. I pitched a contact. That's something that some of these young men haven't really had an opportunity to try, I think. They want to do it, but it just hasn't happened. And pitching to contact, I think you give yourself a more of an opportunity to stay in the ballgame longer, because the guys behind you that play are good athletes also. So you got to utilize their position, shortstop, second base, center field. I mean, that's the power part of the game up the middle. So you got to utilize these people that really have good instincts, good physical ability. And by far, you got to tell yourself that you're not getting these people out all the time. You got to have help, and that's what it's all about.
It's hard to induce soft contact on purpose, though. You know, I wonder, some pitchers have some years where they do it and other years when they just don't. And I've always wondered about the correlation between guys who are able to get the ball off the bat in a more defendable way rather than giving up hard contact, especially this rock-hard baseball that is slipping through the air at record rates. What is the art to – is it off-balance hitting? Is it wear on the bat and making sure you don't find the barrel?
Changing speeds is the number one thing, I think, still in baseball. And they haven't really gotten to the fact where a lot of guys are trying it more. Glavin was an off-speed pitcher from time to time. Maddox, myself, Catfish Hunter. There were so many guys that utilized the good fastball when they needed it, and then changing speeds just offset the hitter a little bit, just to change his eye level. Guys don't like to hit off speed, especially if you got a good one. So I just think that if you tell yourself, and Hendricks is a guy like that, man, he's not afraid to throw changeups. You just make the hitter do part of the work. Make him think that you're going to get fastballs, but then you're changing speeds. That ball's 4 or 5 miles an hour slower, and they're out in front, hit the ball at the end of the bat, or they jam themselves. That's what the game's all about, and that's what you call pitching.
John Lester is going tonight, and he's been getting hit around lately, and he says he just doesn't feel as comfortable standing on the mound. He's earned our trust. He's earned the right for us to be believed when he says he knows what can be fixed. He's somebody who for a long time lived down in the zone, and now a lot of those swings are coming up through the down part of the zone. What are some indicators that Lester is going well, other than just looking at the movement of his pitches? But what do you watch for to see if he's got it?
Well, I think when you warm up in the bullpen, that's an indicator that you've got control, you got pretty good speed, pitches are where you want in the strike zone. And then you got to tell yourself, once you leave the bullpen to the mound, you have a lot more, intensity. And believe me, when you go out there, you got a lot of adrenaline going when that hitter comes to the plate. The adrenaline part is what you got to control. You can't throw the ball by all these people. So you got to be able to change speeds from time to time. And knowing the hitters, that's got, like I said, past experience is going to help you more than anything else.
Talking about the Hall of Famer, Fergie Jenkins, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. When you talk about changing speeds, Fergie, I wonder if you're talking, are you talking mostly about breaking stuff or altering kind of the fastball a little bit? Because I've heard guys say, you know, you drag the back foot a little bit to maybe take something off and alter, you know, particular pitches just a tick or two to get guys off. Is that part of a player's game now the way that it got talked about in the past? And how much does a catcher play into wanting to change those speeds?
Well, the catcher can see how your approach is at the plate. And if you're even with the plate, open stance, closed stance, that type of situation, some hitters are definitely, I think, habits, creatures of habit. And they'll stay with that same batting stance maybe their whole career or maybe just 1 year and then change. But I think changing speeds off the fastball, maybe a little bit off your curveball, you don't want to try it off the slider as much because you hang the ball. When you hang those sliders, the ball stays in the middle of the plate a lot. So that's not a pitch to hang or to try to change speeds on as much as I say the other two. But, you know, hitters will give you an indicator of how they like to hit. And you got to utilize your ability to kind of combat what they're trying to do.
So what are you looking for? Are you talking about the shape of the swing? Are you watching when the front foot lands?
They're going to tell you if they want to go to right field, they want to hit the ball up the middle. Guys that are pull hitters, guys that stay off the plate, dive into the ball, guys that are late swingers. You take Jeter with the Yankees. He was a handsy hitter, and he tried to push the ball to right center. He hit the ball, a lot of balls up the middle. And he just utilized his hands. A lot of other hitters, they want to get out in front, pull the ball. And unfortunately, if you don't know that or you haven't seen them do it, it's kind of a lost situation for you because you got to learn as you pitch. But if you've seen guys play, I think that from the past experience of pitching against them, you know what to look for, and that's a definite help for you.
Fergie, great to talk to you, as always. We appreciate your availability. Thanks for hanging out for a little bit.
Well, it's a pleasure.
That is Fergie Jenkins. Find him on Twitter at 31FergieJenkins.
Yeah, Fergie did have Bill Buckner's number, 26 plate appearances, 4 hits for Buck, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. It's 160, 192, 160. And like Fergie said, he faced him fairly early on in Bill Buckner's career, but he had the better of the matchup. When we come back, I read something earlier in the show. We were talking to Joe Sheehan when it popped up on Twitter that I think might be the dumbest thing I've seen in quite some time. And of course it comes from the NFL. But this might be one of the dumbest things I've seen maybe in months.
Okay. And while you are transitioning over to a football observation, something happened late on Friday. Something was buried late on Friday. A really bad football story that needs to be called out, because I was enraged when I saw this. It was inevitable. I predicted it would happen.
Of course.
But it has happened. The unhireable has been hired.
We will get to it next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This segment is brought to you by Icon Building Group. Attention Lake County homebuyers, Saturday, June 1st and Sunday, June 2nd, tour the beautiful new custom homes of Riviera Estates located in Greg's Landing and Vernon Hills. Riviera Estates is the perfect opportunity to build your custom home. Search icon-group.com for all the details. That's icon-group.com.
So there we are, about an hour and a half ago, you and I just about ready to have Joe Sheehan on the show and talk baseball with him, and up pops on Twitter some news from a friend of the show, Ian Rappaport, the NFL Network, had broken some news. And it reads like this. Source: the Raiders are signing free agent guard Richie Incognito to a one-year deal. Ugh. He's back in the league after a hiatus, which is the nice way to say that, Karen, having played last for the Bills in 2017. I probably don't have to tell you a whole lot about Richie Incognito's past. He's got the whole thing with bullying of former Miami Dolphins teammate Jonathan Martin. He has pleaded guilty last month in Scottsdale, Arizona, to misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge stemming from an arrest in August. You know, the one, I believe, where he's yelling and screaming and threatening to kill people. Richie Incognito is a guy that most likely needs help, like actual serious mental health assessment and help. Let's get that out of the way first. But it is fairly incredible to me that the NFL, particularly the Raiders, who come with all sorts of baggage, given their own franchise's history, about signing that guy, you know, not even with John Gruden at the helm, but just the Raiders having signed that guy, troubled player, guy with a bad attitude, all that kind of stuff. They've done this for years. But now they sign a guy who turns 36 on July 5th, who hasn't played in quite some time, to come in and solidify a spot for them. He joins Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict, who are already on that roster.
John Gruden, in for a penny, in for a pound.
John Gruden, he's asking for it. I mean, he's asking for this. To say nothing of the issue at hand, that Richie Incognito gets another crack at the NFL, while there are a number of players, one of them in particular, who's not gotten a sniff for something that he said, not did. This is remarkable.
Not as remarkable as this.
This is unbelievable. And it's happening again. And of course it's happening there.
While this is not an NFL story, I do think when you start looking at what you have done or said that constitutes employability or forfeiting your right to employability, that's what brings us to a small town in Texas. In East Texas, there is a town, Mount Vernon.
Okay.
And they needed a high school football coach. The school superintendent, Jason McCullough, has decided that the best thing he can do for his high school community and for these young people is to hire Art Briles.
Come on.
It is a done deal. He has been hired. He has been announced in an auditorium of cheering parents.
Wow.
That Mount
this
Vernon,
happened over the weekend?
They buried it on a Friday night, but literally on a Friday night is when they released this statement. Art Briles, who oversaw 52 rapes and sexual assaults by 31 players. 52 rapes and sexual assaults by 31 players.
I forget the name of the small school. It was a small school in Florida, right, that had interviewed him? No, it was Southern Miss. It was Southern Miss who interviewed him for the offensive coordinator spot.
Mm-hmm.
And instantly the athletic director there got all kinds of blowback on Twitter and from journalists and whatnot about even having Art Briles on an interview list to begin with. This apparently is a lot easier to get done in somewhere in East Texas.
And great job by San Antonio Express News columnist Mike Finger as he wrote this up, where he says that too often we fail to see the good in people. We focus on the negative instead of taking time to appreciate those among us who are trying to make a difference in the world. He said in the small East Texas town of Mount Vernon, there lives an extraordinary school superintendent by the name of Jason McCullough. His commitment to education is breathtaking. As he has hired Art Briles, a man who, while a football coach by title, is above all else a teacher. And then what he proceeds to do is go through the lessons that Art Briles will be able to teach these young people.
Oh, boy.
Such as never question yourself.
How do you get...
Never ask yourself why you kept these players on the team. If your own lawyer arranges for you to attend a mediation session for one of the victims, you may apologize in person. Don't go.
How do you get yourself to a point where you put all of this stuff aside?
He says self-reflection is for the weak. When a neighbor is in trouble, lend an ear, but protect your own interest. Advise her to report the alleged crime to the police. Tell her to go to the cops so you can declare you did the bare minimum and be proud of it. Always believe in redemption. They'll recognize your struggle. They'll recognize your moral fiber. They'll recognize what kind of example you can set, and they'll recognize your winning percentage. And then they'll decide that you should guide their children. It was really cleverly done here as I'm trying to distill down what was written here. But I can't believe the cheering parents, like, yeah, you know exactly what's going to happen at this high school. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know exactly now who is in danger of being heard, of being believed, of being at all cared for.
Honest to God, the only thing I can think of is that the people in this small town in Texas may not have heard what happened.
It's Texas.
I don't. It's crazy to me. I don't know how
the internet reached there yet.
It's an honest question. I really don't know how you, as an educator, as an athletic director at the school, as a decision maker for young children, how you put some of that stuff aside, any of that stuff aside.
Because football.
But it's a high school.
Yep. And this is the guy getting in as the high school coach.
It's unbelievable to me. I mean, the guy caused national outrage, albeit not a whole lot of it, but still a national swell of outrage for being interviewed for an offensive coordinator job at a small D1 college, relatively speaking, in terms of football import. How do you not notice? How does a group of parents, how does a group of kids, for that matter?
Right.
I mean, how does not any one of the high school students who are likely, any one of them who are on Twitter find out what this is? I mean, it's not difficult.
Because Texas, because rural small town, and because football.
So really, then... The answer is Art Briles was always going to coach.
I predicted
it was just a matter of finding where, what place
where
was going
rape
to
is okay.
Care less.
Right, exactly. He was in Italy. He was exiled. He was coaching in Italy because I guess he was able.
Was he really coaching? Do we know? Was he really coaching there?
Teaching something.
Showing up and doing things.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. And your Chicago Wolves have advanced to the Calder Cup Finals. Games begin this weekend. Enjoy discounted concessions and free parking, courtesy of Kia. Tickets start at $15. For information, visit ChicagoWolves.com.
It's really incredible.
Isn't it amazing? It's absolutely amazing. That it's not only is it okay, and apparently this guy McCullough is going hard.
The columnist for the...
No, that's the school superintendent. It's like, yep, I've hired him, and I don't... He's going hard in why it's absolutely he's redemption and he believes he's a different person and he's got life lessons to teach and this is the guy and he's going to restore the greatness of their program.
I don't understand why, even if that's true, for a moment, allow yourself to wonder if that's true.
Right.
Why does he need to be a head football coach?
I don't know.
You know, why does he need to be entrusted with all of those things that he so easily and quickly broke at Baylor? I mean, it doesn't.
It's incredible to me.
The trust and the lies and the character. I mean, why put somebody?
We put in a request for him to join us so we could ask him these questions.
Briles,
the guy who made the hire. I talked to Briles too, but just wanted to see. Hey, you know, be nice to know the answers to some of this stuff, and happy to have him on to answer some of the stuff about what he believes to be true and what's fake news. And
I would imagine at this level, he'll coach. You know, I mean, it was one thing if had he gotten that job, had Art Briles gotten that job at Southern Miss as the offensive coordinator, I probably would have bet, not actually because it's kind of a disgusting thing to bet on, but I probably would have bet that he never actually coached a game, that the swell would have been such that the college would have taken him out of that position.
This is going to happen.
I would think that it does.
I just got this sent to my inbox. The Bears have released their specific panels for their celebration weekend.
Go on.
So this is actually, we knew.
This is for the top 100 players. This is the release, the 100 anniversary.
This is for their 100th celebration weekend. And these are the actual panels that you can go to. This is how they've decided to make up your sort of festival here. It's like a music festival where you're sort of planning which stages and what you want to see.
Okay.
So tell me which of these interests you, okay? Legacy quarterbacks, Jim McMahon and Mitchell Trubisky for an hour.
I would go to that.
All right. The Hall of Fame linebacker panel of Butkus, Singletary, and Erlacher.
Yes.
Saturday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m.
Are you kidding me?
63 championship panel, Ditka, Johnny Morris, and Bob Witaska. These are all an hour long.
You know that's going to be packed.
Of course it is.
You know, it's going to be absolutely packed.
Like, oh, but with Ditka and Johnny Morris, it's like the old show.
Yeah.
It's like the old Mike Ditka show.
Hell yeah.
Oh,
is Bearman going? We know.
He'll be around.
We got
Don?
Is he going? Is Don going?
Don Wachter? 2006 NFC Championship panel.
Yeah.
Garza, Hester, Kreutz, Manley, and Peanut.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You said yes to all of these.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? All that needs to happen is they let Pat Manley MC the whole thing and just tell old stories, rip the hell out of each other. That's going to be fantastic.
Okay. Defensive line panel. Hampton, Tommy Harris, Akeem Hicks, Ed Obradovich, and Chris Zorich.
Why wouldn't I go to that?
Go Bears.
Why wouldn't
why
I go?
Why isn't Zorich at the linebacker
I think they should move him to the different panel. 85 championship panel, Dent, Galt, Hilgenberg, Moorhead, Otis Wilson.
Go Bears!
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Going to that. The one that's on the bottom of the power rankings right now is the, I hate to say it, but it's the quarterback one with McMahon and Mitch.
This one is called Chasing Great. I think it's replacing on the bottom. Prince Amukamara, Kyle Fuller, Charles Leno Jr., Anthony Miller, and Danny Trevathan.
I mean, Prince and Kyle are both fun to talk to, yes? I mean, they've gotten reviews.
They're
going to
be around,
them.
Though, right?
That's so true.
Johnny Morris and Ditka together, come on. This one's called 100 Years in the Making. Virginia McCaskey, George McCaskey, Don Pearson, and Dan Pompey.
You have to go to that, right? If only to scream at Dan and Don about all the things they got wrong on the list, and then go, by the way, you guys did a great job on the list.
The Leading the Bears panel, Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace, and Matt Nagy. That's your newsy one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the hard-hitting question.
Now, this is weekend panels in the South Ballroom. Now we've got the breakout sessions. Okay?
The sit-down.
Those are the big ones. Now we get into some of the breakouts here. Chicago Bears history with Patrick McCaskey. Spicing it up with Anthony Spice Adams, Tariq Cohen, Matt Forte, and Allen Robinson.
Hell yes.
Wherever Spice is going to be fun. The Kids Press Conference. Chase Daniel, Cody Whitehair, and Staley.
They're the kids?
No, I guess kids will ask questions of them, I would imagine.
You know how smart...
I have a question. Who are you?
And what do you do?
Yeah, but you know how smart it is putting Chase Daniel on that panel? Yeah. The guy's hilarious.
Yeah, he's great. Meet the Coordinators, starring the Coordinators, Mark Helfrich, Chuck Pagano, and Chris Tabor.
That's the one all the beat writers will be at because they don't get access to Coordinators, but once a month.
Building the Future. Other front office members, Champ Kelly, Josh Lucas, and Mark Sadowski.
Champ Kelly going to be there?
I was going to say, maybe get to Champ Kelly while you still have the opportunity. So, okay. Number one is got to be Virginia McCaskey. So I just want to hear her go full meatball.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, that one's probably top of the list. But the next best, it's the 06 panel with Manley and all the guys,
you think?
Right? Yeah, I mean, no, for me,
it's Ditka
it
and Johnny Morris. For people of my age, for the same people sort of lamenting the death of Bill Buckner, are the people for whom it was appointment viewing. It wasn't just the coach's show beforehand. He would go on with Johnny Morris on Channel 2 after the game, hammered. Like, completely obliterated. Yeah. See, find that video somewhere. Search for that video of Ditka drunk. It was the best.
You don't think Manley and everybody will have a cocktail or two before they get up on stage?
I don't know. It's not like a match game or something.
I don't know. They might.
All right, I need a number from you, a single-digit number to be
Give
exact.
Give me 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Caller 6 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, will win a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company at Wrigley Field on June 14th. And when we come back, we got a lot going on right now, because when we come back, we are going to give you your chance to win $1,000 in cash with a lucky text keyword. And also at the top of the hour, Joe Madden is going to be on with Lawrence Holmes, and we'll be talking to Lawrence just before that. So don't go anywhere. You have the score.
Wow, what a day.
Tuesdays are Joe days. Feels like a Monday, but it's a Tuesday, because yesterday was Monday, which means we had Joe Sheehan at 10, and Lawrence is going to have Joe Madden coming up at noon. These are trying times for this Cubs team that looks a little soft.
Soft how?
Just the pitching is... It's not tight. I guess loose is a better term for it. It's not tight. And when you have... The other team's pitcher, it was so striking. When the other team's pitcher is like, yeah, I'm throwing my fastball and you can't hit it, and I'm just going to keep throwing it over and over again. And Hamels has one of those where it's just leaky, and everything around the edges is just, it just got to tighten up.
Couldn't quite get like that one call that's going to maybe change the start, like that sort of thing. And they're a little broken right now, too. Like, that's the other part.
They're very broken right now.
You got guys that are coming in and like, oh, I can't pitch. Wait, what? We just called you in to pitch.
Finger hurts.
Can't do it.
Couldn't feel the baseball. I mean, that's going to be, I mean, obviously you're going to ask Joe about Mike Montgomery in a couple of minutes here, but that was very curious. I mean, when I was watching the broadcast, you know, Len, they come out of the break and Len's talking. I didn't even see him throw a warm-up pitch.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen a guy come out there and then not go. The only guy I can think of is, who was the dude who used to sprint? Heath used to sprint out of the bullpen in Arizona. He had a cup of coffee with the Brewers. You know the guy I'm talking about.
Yes.
The big fat white guy. He left the game once, I think after he blew a hammy. sprinting out to the mound and trying to climb the damn thing and didn't throw. But that doesn't count. God, what's his name?
Not Heath Slocum. Texters
will get it. No, I don't think so.
That's why fats don't run.
That was the it's the only guy I can think of that hadn't thrown a pitch before leaving due to injury.
It was Rod Beck who said, yeah, it was Shooter when he said, you know, why didn't you get in shape? He said, you never hear of anybody going on the disabled list with pulled fat. And that was so he was the opposite. He was sort of protected from all that. None of it applied to him.
I always loved that in baseball, what you end up having is this guy's not skinny enough. And then that guy gets skinny and it's like, he's still not good. I thought that was the thing that was going to make him better.
Best shape of his life. It's every year in March, right?
Oh my God. It's the worst. It's the worst when
Todd Coffey. I was wrong. Wasn't Heath. It was Todd Coffey.
Coffey.
It was Todd Coffey. Heath Bell also ran out.
That's why you thought he had the cup of coffee.
I
thought you were talking about Heath Bell.
I thought, a moment I thought so, and then I realized I had the wrong big guy. It was Todd Coffey who did the sprinting and then the hamstring blowing out. Amazing. It's fantastic.
Remember when Bobby Jenks couldn't find the plate? Well, you know, it's because he's fat. Well, no, because he's been fat. Well, not anymore, really. Now he's, like, got some sort of, like, sartorial, like, he's big into hats and ascots and
Bobby Jenks.
Yeah, have you not seen like pictures of fancy Bobby Jenks?
No, he's a posh boy now.
A little bit.
Well, he also just won $5 million in a medical malpractice lawsuit.
Yeah, he did.
So that's a lot of hat money for him. Wait, you're serious? He's doing hats and ass? Was he wearing spats?
I saw. Was it at Sox Fest like a few years ago where people were like, is that Bobby Jenks?
Well, he's always had some pretty impressive salad. You know, when he grows it out, he's got that, like, it's almost like a pompadour, but not.
He was very fancy.
Waves going on.
And I was like, oh, wow, Bobby Jenks being fancy. Good for him.
Never had him pegged for that. That's the boy who was raised by wolves?
Yes, raised by wolves. And didn't he, like, catch his – he burned his hand with a cigarette lighter at one point in the middle of it. Wow. Like, there's all sorts of Bobby Jenks stuff.
Yeah, legends.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, you're walking around now.
Yeah.
Claw.
I got a bad wing. That was
dumb. Claw McKnight.
It was dumb is what it was.
So wait, what's better, Claw McKnight or Connor the Claw McKnight?
I think Claw McKnight is better. I mean,
Dan, what
both
do you think?
Of them suck because I shouldn't be hurt in the first place, and I hate that I am.
He needs a better superhero origin story, I think, than this. Yeah.
When Jackass tries to block home plate without baseball, and then Jackass tries to jump over catcher. Yeah, they could be better than
that. Do you have umpires at your games?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not as bad then. There is somebody actually there to
cook. It's bad because all Connor would have had to do with an actual umpire there is run into the guy.
It's just a level of seriousness. I didn't know how organized or how serious it is or what you pay to be
in the
league.
I mean, it's fairly serious softball we play. I mean, if you're a player on the league, we've probably seen you, that kind of thing.
Player?
I'm the guy who sucks at on the good team. That's me. No, but the umpire, he got the rule wrong. The ball had gone by the catcher, right? So as the catcher goes around to make his tag without the ball and in front of the plate, he's blocking the plate.
How is he making a tag without a ball?
Right. I don't know why. I don't know why he's doing that, but that's what he's doing.
But that's what I'm saying.
Then why are you jumping over it if he doesn't have the ball?
That's what I'm saying. Well, you just run into
this is where I'm wrong.
Just
yeah, absolutely.
Drop a shoulder.
That's
into
where
a
I
guy.
Was because I didn't want to drop the shoulder. That was I was like, oh, I'll jump instead. Not a good decision, but I definitely didn't want to drop the shoulder.
You could have ended up doing a Johnny Damon, like a Chad Kruder kind of thing.
No,
where
the
one
guy,
of you ends up completely broken.
Yeah,
you're wiry strong though. Like you're one of those like tall, lean, strong guys. So drop
a
shoulder
a little
into
bit.
Him.
This guy had 60 pounds on me. I mean, he was catching.
Low man
for a reason.
Wins, Connor.
Pad level.
You know how long it takes me to get low?
That's true.
I'm six. I'm forever above the ground. It
That's
takes
true.
An hour and a half.
Just saying. I tried. I was telling you guys. Tony and I went through this earlier in the year.
Yeah.
We had a media game over at Bulls where there's a bunch of us playing. I got screened by Bill Whittington. I'll never forget
That's
that.
That's no fun.
That's not fun at all. And Tony, you know, Tony was an all-conference high school basketball player. He wanted to show out. And I was like, Tony, don't go 100%. First of all, they're NBA people here, like actual people who played in the NBA. And as good of a player as you are, we're not playing for anything. This is just kind of a friendly game. But you know Tony, 100 miles an hour. And then what happens? Hurts his knee.
No.
Because it's a rec league game. You're not supposed to go 100 miles an hour. You can't guard Randy Brown. Even now, you can't guard him.
So
what
down
are you
trying.
Doing? No, I'm not doing that.
Who else is in the game? What other players?
Was it Sean Respert?
Sean Respert, Kendall Gill.
Yeah.
Whittington.
Oh, yeah. Kendall's still putting it on you. That's the thing.
Well, Kendall will drop a shoulder into you.
And Sean Respert has not forgotten how to shoot.
Correct.
That doesn't leave you.
And there's a big difference between, like, you know, ordinary or, in Tony's case, above average athletes.
Right.
And people who played professionally.
Yeah, even in their older age. You was like, that dude played in the league.
Yeah, you know them fast.
And you're out there. Meanwhile, Connor's out here fighting people.
I wasn't fighting
the
anybody.
The Claw's
not
out here fighting folks.
There were no fights. There
Did
no
you
fights.
Survive the storms? I know you're south of the city, and that's where it was all concentrated.
Okay, can someone help me out with this? So yesterday, you know, Mel and I, we went for a great walk in Hyde Park. Like we went to Mellow Yellow. It was really fantastic. Oh. And I said, look, we got to get in here before 1 o'clock. And she was trying to plant some stuff in the yard. She's like, I don't know if it's going to rain. So we made a little bet, whatever. I'm sitting in the basement, like watching baseball, and everything like, like comes on the screen. And I text Mel, I'm like, hey, I know I wouldn't ordinarily say this, but you should probably get to the basement of the house. And she's like, okay. So she's downstairs, and I'm like,
I hope you took your pants off in the interim.
Hello?
This is what you came down here for.
Right. I didn't say why.
Surprise. Also, the weather's terrible. Right.
What I couldn't understand is I don't live very far from where the White Sox play baseball.
Yeah.
And there were like tornado warnings. And I'm in the – and they're like, get to the basement – and I'm in the basement, and the White Sox are still on my TV.
They're right
playing.
There.
The only man that should be out in that weather is Yolmer Sanchez.
Yeah, because supposedly...
the only man.
He is impervious to lightning.
No, he has too much joy. Yep. His joy insulates him from anything. He's impervious to pain just by sheer force of joy.
I was just trying to figure out. I'm like, okay. I said, I know that this thing is moving northeast. Like, I get that. But if they're telling you in Hyde Park to batten down the hatches.
Well, Demetrius was. Because Tom Skilling was too busy jumping up and down.
He was enjoying
running around naked.
Telling you about the weather. And I
amazing
get that.
Tubes of moisture. Massive shaft of moisture. Demetrius, who's going to die? Well, these people. Okay, but, back to you.
But strangely moisture. Enough, 4 miles away from my house, they were playing professional baseball in soup.
Yep.
And I didn't understand, and chili, apparently. I didn't understand why. At one point, Jason Benetti was like, yeah, it looked like he slid into a hot fudge sundae. And I was like, yeah, this probably should stop playing baseball now, as people are being evacuated to the center or the basement of their house.
Joe's got some great stories, by the way, about weather in the Texas League.
Really?
He was in Midland?
Yes. Yeah,
I want to say he was managing Midland or coaching there. And just like that was before all of the serious weather just hit everywhere all the time now.
Yeah.
But when Tornado Alley wasn't the entire middle of the United States.
Yeah.
That's where it would dust up real fast.
Well, I'll ask him a little bit about that along with some other stuff, because like you said, you know, it's been like about a week and a half of stumbling Cubs baseball.
Yeah, not comfortable.
Yeah, but it's still in first place.
Yeah, nose above water. But
right. It's been a little bit more uncomfortable. Yeah. So I will talk with him momentarily. Gentlemen, have a great day. Cheers. Connor, take care of your arm.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.